Welcome to the Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. What did George Washington do that you might not know about? What did Abe Lincoln know that could change the way you think about the Civil War? You'll learn about all that and more on this special show designed to restore excitement in American history. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to the Grateful American TV show. This is an interactive multimedia project dedicated to restoring enthusiasm in American history for kids and adults. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, the executive director of the Grateful American Foundation, an organization founded on President's Day 2014 by David Bruce Smith. He is a publisher and author of children's books on American history for kids and adults. Bringing visitors to the hallowed ground where the founding fathers and mothers made history is the focus of the Grateful American series. And here at the New York Historical Society, the focus is on hallowed objects, according to Dr. Louise Meir, who joined the organization in June 2004. Under her guidance, New York Historical is reinvigorating its commitment to foster greater public understanding of history and its impact on the world today. Under Dr. Meir's direction, the New York Historical Society is launching groundbreaking exhibits, including Slavery in New York, as well as the French Founding Father, Lafayette's Return to Washington's America, and World War II and New York City, as well as an array of intellectually engaging lectures, debates, and family programs that go on every week. Dr. Meir is also inaugurating the Saturday Academy, an American history enhancement program for high school students, and a new graduate institute on constitutional history. Prior to joining the New York Historical Society, Dr. Meir was the City University of New York's Executive Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs. There, she spearheaded the U.S. History Initiative, which strengthened the university's American history curriculum through faculty development, online course materials, and increased enrollment in American history courses. All very impressive accomplishments. So now we get a tour of this amazing facility.
Louise, it's so nice to have you here today. As you might remember, my father considered himself a grateful American. And when you spoke with him, he said that he was particularly interested in sites, historic sites, that had hallowed ground, like Gettysburg. But you told him that the New York Historical Society had hallowed objects. Can you elaborate on that?
Absolutely. First, let me say that I'm delighted to be here with you today. This gives me a great opportunity to talk about this fabulous institution and its great history. I would say that your father, Robert H. Smith, was a tremendous inspiration to me in better positioning this institution's message. Because he did say, as a matter of fact, that hallowed ground was his interest. He liked supporting institutions that could be linked very physically to a founder. And of course, New York, as your father knew better than anyone else, not simply because he spent part of his early years here, but also because he was a builder and he knew about New York's great history of tearing down everything that he had built in order to build the city back up again. So we have very little hallowed ground in this city, but we do have a lot of hallowed objects, and most of them are here at the New York Historical Society. So in thinking about how we would reinvent ourselves, reimagine ourselves as New York's great destination for history, your father actually provoked us to think about how to substitute the goods, the hallowed objects, for what we lacked, which was the hallowed ground.
So when people touch or see the hallowed objects, do you think they have as much of a sensory and physical experience as, say, walking through a Monticello or a Mount Vernon or a Lincoln Cottage? Does it affect them emotionally?
There could be nothing more evocative of the kind of reaction, the kind of emotional excitement, that kind of reaction that people have to a hallowed object than right where we're standing now, which is in front of George Washington's armchair, the very seat that he sat in when he was inaugurated as the nation's first president in New York. When people see that object, they they get goosebumps. They get the same feeling that I've had over the last decade, which is that is really the seat of our nation. That's where George Washington founded the United States in a very real sense. And it is not at all dissimilar to the feeling one gets when one goes to Mount Vernon and understands where Washington actually had his home.
So we're here today in the Robert and Clarice Smith New York Gallery of American History. And this is an amazing facility filled with all these incredible portraits and artifacts. Can you tell us a little bit about what is behind you?
Yes, on the wall behind me, to my right and to my left, is really the story of the making of New York as we understand it to be today. New York was an occupied city during the entire length, virtually the entire length of the American Revolution. And we begin with a tale, a physical tale, from the horse of King George III. Now, that was part of a statue that that used to stand in Bowling Green in Lower Manhattan. And when the Declaration of Independence was read out by the revolutionaries on July 4th, 1776, the statue was knocked down. And the only piece of the statue that actually remains is the tail of King George III's horse. And we have it in our collection. So that's really where the story begins. And what we've done is we've organized our narrative of New York's making into several sequences. So we begin with occupied British New York, and we move forward to tell the story of the various protagonists who actually took New York from an occupied city during the Revolution to its prosperity today. One of the most important artifacts that we have in our collection is actually the chair that George Washington sat in when he was inaugurated as the nation's first president. It's an incredible piece of furniture, though it looks rather plain and unprepossessing. It was the seat, the chair that George Washington sat in when he was inaugurated. And we're very proud of that article because it it gives us a connection not only to the father of our country, but also to the importance that New York once had as the nation's capital. Few people know today that New York actually was our nation's first capital and that George Washington was inaugurated here. And we also tell other stories that are very virtually unknown or less well known. For example, many people know about the duel between Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr that resulted in Alexander Hamilton's death in 1804. Aaron Burr is seen as a very unlikable character, which assuredly he was. Alexander Hamilton was a wonderful founder, a New York, great New York story, and Aaron Burr was responsible for his death. But Aaron Burr actually was, in other realms of his life, was a very enlightened figure. And he, unlike many, many of the men of his time, believed that women should be educated. And he saw to it that his daughter Theodosia, whose portrait is on the other side of Aaron Burr's up there on our wall, Theodosia became quite well educated, and that was very important to him. We also have pistols that Hamilton and Burr used to shoot at one another during their famous duel in Weehawken. And talk about hallowed objects and having a physical, visceral relationship with something. I mean, those were the pistols that these two men used.
So I think also a lot of Americans don't realize that the British occupied New York for almost the entire Revolutionary War. Tell us a little bit about that and some of the portraits that are behind you, the characters that really lived during that era.
It's true. Many people do not realize that New York was basically out of the American Revolution. George Washington was routed from New York right after he came here from Bunker Hill and Boston, and he always lamented the fact that he lost New York, but he did, in fact, he had an incredible escape, and The remarkable story that we're only learning today is that the British were a little bit less enthusiastic about really doing damage to their enemy. They were a little bit conflicted about George Washington and the American side of the story. So it is perhaps the case that he was allowed to escape and prosecute the rest of the war. Very, very interesting story. But come what may, New York was occupied for 8 years. It was a British city. One of the great artifacts that we have in our collection, which is upstairs on our fourth floor, is a beautiful coach that was made for the Beekman family. Now, the Beekman family came to New York in the 17th century, and just around the time, just before the Revolutionary War, they commissioned a beautiful coach to be made for them so they could strut in style. They were a very wealthy family on the streets of New York, and the coach was actually made in England and shipped here. Slight pitch to its wheels so that it could correspond to the way the roads were in New York at the time. Now, the Beekman Mansion, which is on the east side of Manhattan, was occupied by the British. The British just took over as barracks and as homes for their dignitaries, all of the great homes in New York at the time, and they took over Beekman Mansion. The coach was so cherished by the Beekman family that they hid it under a haystack, and actually the British never found it. So at the end of the Revolutionary War, it was uncovered and used once again. So very happy ending for the Beekman family coach, and they did have the Beekman Mansion restored to them. But New York has many, many artifacts of having been an occupied city, and in fact, when the British left, they burned New York to the ground. So a truly incredible story about New York's rising and falling and rising and falling, tearing down and building up again, that so engaged Mr. Smith when we first began talking about how we would populate this gallery, this fantastic gallery with artifacts and paintings, was that story of the British leaving New York in ruins. And such a short time later, we already had the stock exchange, and we already had some great buildings rising, Federal Hall at the tip of Manhattan, and many others.
So Louise, I want to play off what you had just said about the rise and fall of New York, the rise and fall. Obviously, we're standing in front of the 9/11 exhibit, and there's nothing like the fall of New York during this era, but also the rise of the people who came together. Here on the wall, it says the destruction of the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001 was the most watched and photographed event in human history. So tell us a little bit about this permanent exhibit.
Well, in fact, 9/11 was, in many respects, like other occasions during the history of New York, where the city just seemed to be at its lowest point and would never recover. The burning of the city by the British as they left is certainly an important example of that happening. But in fact, on 9/11, my predecessor, this great historian, Ken Jackson, was president of the New York Historical Society, and the next day, on September 12th, he told his colleagues, it is time for us to go back to work as historians. Policemen are back at work, the firemen are back at work, and historians have to be back at work as well, because people will want to know what happened on this day. And so colleagues at the New York Historical Society began to collect and preserve exactly as our founders had done when they realized that they had lived through an extremely important moment, the Revolutionary War, and collected and preserved. We're standing in front of the doors of one of the fire engines, which was the first to reach the site on 9/11. And as a result of the collecting that was done by the New York Historical Society soon after 9/11, we have, in fact, one of the most important collections around 9/11 anywhere. The photographs that you see in the background are examples, small number of examples chosen from 10,000 photographs that we were given from a project called Here is New York, which gathered together many photographers, many of them professional, others, amateur photographers who photographed the event that day. And of course, the story that we tell two stories. This exhibition is opposite the exhibition that we call New York Rising, which parallels the founding of our institution and the history of New York through our founding. And as New York rises, we see a city taken from the ashes to great prosperity. And of course, the point that we want to make by positioning the 9/11 exhibit opposite that is that precisely what the attackers wanted to destroy was what New York symbolized, the, we think, greatness of the city, the prosperity of our way of life, the huge advantage of how we developed it as a nation, democracy, freedom, all of what we care about and see as American was what was targeted on 9/11. And we hope that visitors will ponder not only the ashes that resulted from 9/11, but the importance of what we had accomplished in this country to that point. And as you say, the remarkable resilience, not only of the city, but of people who came from all across the nation and from all around the world to help New York recover. And it is a real New York story, tragic though it is. It's a real New York story of rising from the ashes, rising up again, resilience, and a story of people who wanted to help above all.
Thank you so much, Dr. Meir. You could not have said it better. We are at the New York Historical Society, and you are watching the Grateful American TV show. I am Hope Katz Gibbs, your co-host, and I look forward to seeing you next time.
You have been listening to the Grateful American radio show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. Here's to restoring enthusiasm in history for kids and adults, too.